Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with KNSJ Radio, and I'm here with Miriam Raftery, the editor and writer for East County Magazine. Today's article had a blistering expose of what's going on in East County called Closed for Fire Season. Could you tell us a little bit about that, Miriam?
Sure, Leon. This story came about because we heard from some very concerned residents from Hakumba Hot Springs and Boulevard who informed us that their fire stations were closed many, many, many days, and that in fact there'd been at least one death out there recently attributed directly to the lack of response time.
How did that come about?
There was a person found unconscious at the De Anza Resort area, and 911 was called, and it took somewhere around an hour or so. We've had conflicting reports, but a very long time for help to arrive. Someone on scene was doing CPR the whole time, a resident. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough. The paramedics, by the time they got there, were able to get a heartbeat started again, but by the time he was airlifted to a hospital that evening, he died. And this is just the tip of a very big iceberg, however. What we found out is that the Hakumba station had been closed quite a few days, several days a month, some months, and other days only two men on an engine. But when you go over to Boulevard, the next station over, well, it was also closed that same day. And it turns out that the Boulevard station was closed 30 days in September, 28 days in August, and 25 days in July, including at least the first 7 days in October. We had red flag alerts last week, Leon, and both of these stations were closed during the red flag alert for the highest fire danger that we have.
In Boulevard, isn't there power projects going on in construction that actually increases the fire danger?
Yes, all kinds of them. Of course, we've already had Sunrise Power Link come through. They are currently expanding one substation out there and building another one. So you've got the Eco substation and the Boulevard substation, and then Thule Wind has been approved to go in, which would put 500-foot-tall wind turbines, each full of flammable fuel oil, in there. Now, there was supposed to be some SDG&E mitigation money. It was part of the deal when the county approved these projects. So one of the questions residents are asking is, where did the money go? Because it sure doesn't seem to be flowing to the communities that were supposed to get the extra protection.
So then how did the rural residents feel about this?
Well, they're understandably burned up. And I should add, before we get into that, that the Boulevard station is now part of the County Fire Authority. Now, when the county started forming its fire agency, the whole point was supposed to be to unify some of these rural volunteer stations and make people safer. You were supposed to see better staffing. Instead, they've essentially, for all intents and purposes, closed that station. Might as well. Nobody's there. And they're relying on a CAL FIRE station at the other end of Boulevard to provide protection. Now, the problem with that is it's even farther to get to these energy projects, even farther to get to Hakumba. And, of course, if that CAL FIRE crew is out fighting a wildfire someplace, it could be even longer to get to places that are right there in Boulevard. So how do the residents feel about that? Donna Tisdale is the chair of the Boulevard Planning Group. She calls the closures unconscionable. She says this is a failure or willful negligence by fire agencies and county decision makers. Ken Dauback is the head of the Real East County Fire Safe Council, and he calls the whole situation felony stupid. And he says that some of the blame goes on the fact that in an effort to have more training, they've made the requirements so rigid, 16 weeks of full-time training, that people who work full-time, volunteer firefighters, some of them who've been there 20, 30 years, just can't do it, so they're quitting. They're even losing former CAL FIRE battalion chiefs, high-level folks out there. So it's really a bizarre situation. Now, Howard Cook, who is chair of the planning group out there in Hakumba, says that another huge wildfire is a certainty.
So tell me, Miriam, how does this all affect the homeowners in the rural areas as far as their insurance and tax fees are concerned?
Well, Well, they're getting burned, basically. The insurance in Hucumbah Hot Springs is now rated 9. The area is rated a 9, 10 being the worst. And according to the officials out there, it is because of the unreliability of the fire station coverage. These people have done everything else right. They have plenty of fire hydrants. They've got a lake they've revitalized as a water source. They've done their defensible space. But because the fire station isn't staffed, the residents are having to pay a lot more for fire insurance if they can even get it at all. Of course, that's a very serious concern.
Tell me, what's happening in other parts of the unincorporated county?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, Leon. Now, up in the northeast part of the county, we're seeing some districts that are standing up and saying, we don't want to be taken over by the county fire authority. They're hearing these horror stories. As I should add, there's some areas, you know, that are not unhappy. Lakeside's fire chief says he has confidence in the county fire authority. But up in Valley Center, the Rural Fire Protection District up there decided to outsource their firefighting services to the San Pasquale Indian Tribe, and they did it for less money than what the county was paying to Cal Fire, because, of course, it's union wages and all of that. But they're getting, they feel, better fire protection, and they're not having this issue with dark days and lack of staffing, from what I'm told. And then up in Julian, the people actually went out and raised money themselves, largely with help from one well-heeled donor, so that they could keep their fire station independent as a volunteer station and not have to be absorbed by the county.
What do our county supervisors like Diane Jacob have to say about this?
We asked Supervisor Jacob, and I have a quote from her. First of all, she said that she was very surprised. She was not aware of all of these closures until we brought it to her attention. A staffer of hers sent this response. While the county has taken big steps to beef up backcountry fire protection, it's troubling that we have gaps in staffing at some facilities. My office is working with county fire authority officials to address this issue, and I'll be meeting with these same officials. Our goal is to always make sure that the public doesn't experience a gap in service. In many cases, like in Boulevard, there is also a Cal Fire station nearby that can respond to a fire call or a medical emergency, she said. And she added that the county has invested about $250 million since 2003 to bolster its fire protection, including new equipment stations and better trained firefighters. She added that maintaining adequate staffing has long been a baseline goal, so I want to make sure we're delivering on that promise.
Aren't the rural residents paying a fire tax fee? What's being done?
Good point, Leon. Yes, they are paying a fire tax fee. A lot of them objected to it, but the state imposed it, and this is supposed to, of course, assure adequate fire protection. But obviously, that's not happening. And that's another thing people are asking. Why don't they take that fire tax fee they're being required to pay and use it to hire staffing to man these stations?
Now, didn't the grand jury have something to say about fire protection out in East County a while back?
Yes, and actually the whole push to start a county fire authority is because of exactly what the grand jury found after the 2003 Cedar Fire and again the 2007 firestorms, where it seemed like not enough had been done in between. So in 2008, a county grand jury report blasted the county for its continued lack of progress in creating what the grand jury called a historically and currently failing system to provide the resources necessary to protect residents and visitors during significant firestorms. Now, I just told you the county was bragging about spending a couple $100 million over quite a few years on improving fire protection. Well, a grand jury found that San Diego County back then was only spending $8.5 million a year on fire protection. Compare that to Orange County that was spending $260 million every year. That's right, what San Diego has spent beefing things up in the last, 6 years here, Orange County spends that in a single year. Los Angeles County was spending $860 million a year. Remember, county was at $8.5 million? That's 10 times as much as San Diego County was spending for an area approximately the same. Both were about 4,000 square miles or so. L.A. did have 3 times more people, but they were spending 10 times as much, according to the grand jury report.
In your investigation, in your article in East County Magazine, how have people responded?
We're getting an amazing response from the public. People are outraged that this is going on. If they didn't know about it, those who were aware are saying, finally, somebody's speaking out. And we're hearing confidentially, there's nothing official yet, but we are hearing that this really rattled some cages and got the attention of some of the public officials and some fire officials, and that it looks like some funding is going to be coming through, at least for that Hakumba station, to authorize some overtime or some extra money to get, it'll probably be two-man crews, just medical, in there. But we're waiting for confirmation, and we've still heard nothing about what, if anything, is going to be done for Boulevard. Now, the other thing is it's not just those communities.
What other communities are affected?
A lot of them. I don't have all the answers, but I do have in hand an internal memorandum about staffing from the Rural Fire Protection District. And it's got some very troubling notes in here. For example, Potrero, stipend not currently covered, or is there any plan to cover due to lack of county reserves, is the note in the margin on that one. Any plan to cover at all? This is the area, may I remind you, where the Harris Fire started in 2007. It was fueled by hurricane force, 100-mile-an-hour winds, and their fire station, sounds like, is closed, closed more often than it's open. Same thing is going on in Dulzura. It says rarely covered. Dehisa, rarely covered. Harbison Canyon, big question mark there. That one seems to be up in the air. And the troubling thing is that, you know, the best of them say stipend and regularly covered, and yet Hakumba was listed as regularly covered, and we know that it was not.
Fire stations in the Rural Fire Protection District, most of those are out in the front line of where wildfires would begin.
And you're right. And granted, these stations, their responsibility is not to battle the wildland fires. That would be a CAL FIRE responsibility. However, we also know that a house fire that starts can easily burn into the brush and become a major fire, as can a fire from any one of these other things, these energy projects, a car that catches fire, anything. Kids playing with matches. And when you don't have anybody local who can get there, you know, where it's taking an hour for help of any kind to arrive from far away, I think any of us would agree that's unconscionable. Now, the other thing is we're trying to look around and find out are other areas in the unincorporated part of the county as bad? And actually, the answer is no. Some of them are doing pretty well. San Miguel Fire, which serves the Mount Helix area, Spring Valley, some others. They made the decision last year to outsource their firefighting services to CAL FIRE, which is also who the County Fire Authority partners with. But in that case, I was assured by their spokesman, Leonard Villarreal, yesterday that they actually had no dark days since the takeover earlier this year. Their stations have been open every single day since then and fully staffed. They have not had any two-man crews anymore. It's all been, I'm not sure if it's three or four-man, but certainly much better than what we're seeing other places. So it begs the question. Everybody in the county is paying, they're all paying their property taxes to the county, they're all paying the state fire tax, so why is it that some areas in the rural communities are getting the short end of the stick? And these are the areas where the worst fires traditionally have started, fires that can threaten everyone in the county, so why are they not being protected?
Thank you, Miriam, and more can be read in today's East County Magazine.
EastCountyMagazine.org, and we certainly will be staying on this story. And readers, if any of you have insights or stories to share about this important issue, please contact editor@EastCountyMagazine.org or give a call to 619-698-7617, because we definitely want to hear from you. And that's editor@EastCountyMagazine.org.
So read the article, Closed for Fire Season, in today's East County Magazine.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is Isaac Rodriguez with a health alert. Nearly two dozen San Diegans have fallen ill with salmonella due to chicken products from Foster Farms facilities in California. The products were also sold under other brands and store names including Ralph's, Safeway, Kirkland, which is sold at Costco, MO Organics and Eating Rights. Nationwide, 278 people in 18 states have fallen ill due to contaminated chicken. Foster Farms announced yesterday that it has reached an agreement with federal inspectors to make improvements to its processing. The company has not yet recalled products, insisting that cooking the tainted chicken thoroughly eliminates risk. But Consumer Reports contends that the chicken products should be recalled to protect consumers. If you eat chicken, be sure to avoid contaminating food preparation surfaces and thoroughly clean any surface that comes in contact with raw chicken. Use a food thermometer when cooking to assure that the meat is cooked.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Planners and residents in Pine Valley provided a frosty reception last week to representatives from Ecoplexus, a developer that wants to build a solar project on a meadow in Buckman Springs. Planners voted unanimously, 11-0, to find the project inconsistent with the County General Plan and Central Mountain Regional Plan. By energy industry standards, this is a small green project, 3 megawatts on two 12-acre parcels at Buckman Springs Road. It would be visible from Old Highway 80 and Interstate 8. But to residents in this rural community, this is a substantial intrusion along scenic highways and community character. Residents and planners voiced concerns over these and other impacts, repeatedly stating that while profits flow to developers, local residents would not see any decrease in their rates, and they're already paying the highest electric rates in the nation. No one spoke in favor of the project except for Ecoplexus. Planning group member Ann Steineman noted that near other energy projects that have gone in East County, there is evidence of property values going down, so there are no benefits, she said, but there are negatives. Ecoplexus representatives Gary Eberhardt and Carlos Valdivia did their best to present the project, offering to work with the community to make improvements. We want to do something beautiful for the whole world, Valdivia said. He stressed the importance of shifting to renewable fuels instead of fossil fuel and nuclear so that we can reduce risks from pollution, radiation, and global climate change. Ecoplexus sought to allay some common backcountry project concerns. Planners were assured that the project would use no water from local wells. A fence resembling landscaping could camouflage the facility. No herbicides would be used, and weeds would be whacked by hand, Ecoplexus promised. Many opposed losing land zoned agricultural. An Ecoplexus representative said the project could be removed in 20 years, and potentially the land could be restored to agricultural use. The project has approval from SDG&E to connect up to the grid, and power would be used in the Pine Valley area first, with surplus power passed on to other locations. But that didn't satisfy planners or community members. Planning group member Brandon Perry observed, "I haven't seen anything on utility bills going down. This only benefits the landowner, you, and the developer," he said. Vern Denham, another member, asked why rural East County has been targeted for so many energy projects while wealthier communities along the coast have not. He asked, "Do you have any desires to put these up in Del Mar, La Jolla, or Rancho Santa Fe?" The developer responded that coastal fog would make it impractical to put a solar farm near the coast and that large tracts of flat level land are hard to find. Several speakers voiced fear that if one energy project is approved, more would seek to cluster in the area, as has happened in Imperial County and the Boulevard region. The audience peppered the developer with questions on issues ranging from fire danger to jobs. The developer claimed the project would not increase fire danger, but admitted that the project would create no long-term jobs since it's monitored remotely and only a short-term bump in employment during construction. Kelly Fuller spoke on behalf of the Protect Our Communities Foundation. That is a nonprofit that has sued over other energy projects in our area. She formerly worked with the American Bird Conservancy at a national level in Washington, D.C. on a bird collision program. She said that this summer information has emerged showing a problem with birds colliding with solar facilities. The theory is that the birds may mistake a sea of shimmering solar panels for water. Some solar projects now have bird kill rates approaching that of wind projects, she said. The birds killed are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and Endangered Species Act, making those deaths illegal. She asked if Ecoplexus would take steps to prevent bird deaths and count dead birds. An Ecoplexus spokesman said he was not familiar with the problem. Planning group member Denham then reminded the developer that when pitching a similar project in Descanso, Ecoplexus said it looks like a glistening lake of water. Eberhardt indicated he was unfamiliar with the bird kill issue. "We're at the very initial stages," he said. Another citizen voiced skepticism over claims by energy developers, noting that a bird expert hired by wind companies for two local wind projects just got indicted. A reference to David Bittner, who pled guilty to federal charges of mishandling birds, including eagles, after it was revealed he had no permits and a freezer full of dead birds. Concern was also raised that solar projects can draw insects and potentially kill bees, which are already declining in population in our region. Ecoplexus countered that conventional energy projects kill more birds and bees than solar. Eberhardt said this is not a utopia, there are trade-offs. Others voiced concerns over dust, high winds, and even hang gliders who land in a field where the project is proposed to go. After the unanimous vote opposing the project, Ecoplexus was told that the company can return again after it completes studies on visual impacts and biological resources. The Pine Valley Planning Group is an advisory board, so the final decision will rest with the County Planning Commission and ultimately the Board of Supervisors. But community planners clearly put the solar company on notice that the outlook is far from sunny for winning their approval. Planning Group member Denham called the Pine Valley region a unique jewel in the county. He summed up the sentiments of many residents here, concluding that Pine Valley and its surroundings should be kept as the kind of rural, sleepy places that we'd like to call home. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Working in snowy weather and high winds, a team of rescuers located a missing plane shortly after midnight Thursday morning in the Volcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve. The pilot, Andrew Thulin of San Diego, and his female passenger, Robbie Rose, were found dead inside the airplane along with their dog. The plane crashed into a rugged, steep hillside near the top of Volcan Mountain. The Piper Mooney aircraft left Palm Springs and was en route to Gillespie Field in El Cajon when it vanished off radar and was reported missing in the early evening. A sheriff helicopter had to abandon a search effort due to stormy weather, which made flying unsafe. So the sheriff's search and rescue team was deployed on the ground, along with Julian deputies, a U.S. Border Patrol Borstar team, San Diego Mountain Reserve, an Aero Reserve, and Civil Air Patrol members. Searchers used the pilot's cell phone number to obtain a ping and find the downed aircraft. Cause of the crash is not yet known. However, weather alerts were in effect for that area due to snow, high winds, and thunderstorms. The tragedy stands as a reminder to pilots to always check weather conditions and delay your flight when a severe storm is forecast.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. Fall always brings great activities to East County, including harvest festivals and Halloween events. This week, we will preview local pumpkin patches, hay rides, haunted trains, and spooky parades. But first, Alpine Country Gifts and Crafts presents its 20th annual Craft and Harvest Festival to be held in Alpine. For three consecutive days, starting on Thursday, October 10th, and continuing through Saturday, October 12th, at the Alpine Women's Club on Alpine Boulevard. The event features crafts and handmade items, including owl nesting boxes and festive foods from the Women's Club kitchen. Santee is hosting a car show on Saturday, October 12th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The show will feature over 150 cars, 100 vendor booths, and kids rides, and will be held at Mission Gorge Road and Riverview Parkway in Santee. The Poway branch of the San Diego County Library will hold a Woody Fest on Saturday, October 12th in Poway from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Visitors can enjoy the music of Woody Guthrie as part of the second annual Woody Fest, performed by Ross Moore, Jeff Bertino, and friends. This event is sponsored by the Friends of the Poway Library. Lakeside Chamber of Commerce is hosting a chili cook-off to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Cedar Fire with the name Beans, Beer, and Business. The event at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds will be held on Saturday, October 12th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and includes entertainment and vendor booths. The Lakeside Chamber is looking to connect with everyone who was affected by the fires and those who were so helpful in the rebuilding process. Champagne Brunch in the Pavilion has returned to Cottonwood Golf Club on Willow Glen Drive in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon every Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Breakfast and lunch items will be served, including carving and waffle stations, with mimosas and champagne. A Fair Trade Gift Fair will be held on Sunday, October 13th in La Mesa. A wide variety of handcrafted, fairly traded items will be available from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on El Cajon Boulevard in La Mesa. Visitors can savor samples of Fair Trade certified ice cream, Ben & Jerry's, and coffee while perusing gift items such as handmade baskets, jewelry, clothing accessories, and an abundance of gift items. Also available for purchase will be Fair Trade chocolate, coffee, tea, bananas, and soda. Among the vendors participating in the gift fair are Around the World Gifts, The Purpose, Seven Hopes United, Malia Designs, Cool Beans Chocolates, Cafe Virtuoso, The Tomorrow Project, The Guatemala Project, Serve, and Vava Vida. The designation of fair trade signifies that artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world have received fair livable wages for their product or ingredients. In addition, certain standards must be met in the production process. These include protecting the environment, building economic sustainability, and providing opportunities for education and health care for families. Young children are protected from forced labor as well. The City of La Mesa will hold its fourth annual Senior Expo on Thursday, October 10th, at the La Mesa Community Center on Memorial Drive in La Mesa during the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. Now for some upcoming fall and Halloween events. The Campo Depot Museum has announced the 2013 Pumpkin Express in its 10th year at the Great Pumpkin event at the museum. Travel to the Great Pumpkin's Pumpkin Patch and tour the haunted train, where kids can pick out and decorate their own pumpkins. The trains are popular and seating is limited, so reservations are required. Trains leave at 10 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. The museum at the Campo Depot on State Highway 94 and Forest Gate Road recommends that riders arrive in Campo at least 45 minutes before departure time, especially if they haven't been to Campo before. The 48th Annual Borrego Days Desert Festival is a free weekend event beginning on Friday, October 25th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., and continuing through Sunday, October 27th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Borrego Springs. The event offers family entertainment, a Saturday parade, artists, retail and food vendor booths, and the sounds of live entertainment floating through the desert air. The second annual Haunt Fest in El Cajon will be held on Friday, October 25th, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., and is located at East Main Street and Rhea Avenue in El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live bands, a juried art show, costume contests, a haunted house, carnival rides for the kids, food, and more. Enjoy a spooky camp sleepover at Lions, Tigers, and Bears on Friday, October 26th and 27th. Guests can gaze at the stars and listen to the majestic sounds of the animals. Campers provide tent, breakfast, and dinner. A costume contest will be held on the morning of Saturday, October 26th. Lions, Tigers, and Bears will provide the s'mores. Nighttime spooky hayrides will be in motion at the Julian Mining Company in Julian. Hayrides begin at 7:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on Saturday, October 26th. A fun and spooky hayride lasting approximately a half an hour, with embellished historical accounts of early miners, may frighten the faint of heart, but there will be nothing gory or violent in nature, and this hayride will be appropriate for all ages. Be there a half an hour before your hayride begins and enjoy complimentary popcorn, coffee, and hot apple cider while you wait. To reserve space in advance, see our calendar for October 26th at East County Magazine. Also at the Julian Mining Company, pick your own apples, pick your own pumpkin in the field, enjoy tractor-pulled hayrides, a gift shop, picnic area, petting zoo, and farm animals. They are open every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Bates Nut Farm in Valley Center has pumpkins in the field, a maze, a gift shop, snack bar, picnic area, tractor-pulled hay rides, pony rides, and a petting zoo. Extended Saturday-Sunday hours in October are 8:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Weekend pumpkin packages are also available and includes one pumpkin, a hayride, and straw maze. Mountain Valley Ranch in Ramona has a pumpkin patch, corn maze, corn cannon, petting zoo, and gourds. Families can meander through the fields and pick their own pumpkin or select one inside the barn. They are open in October from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and are located on Highway 78 in Ramona. Oma's Pumpkin Patch at Van Omering Dairy has a pumpkin patch, hayride, hay maze, petting zoo, sand pile, and is located on El Monte Road in Lakeside. They are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., but closed Sunday and Monday. Summer's Past Farm in Flynn Springs on Old Highway 80 has a pumpkin patch, alpacas from East County Alpaca Breeders, and kids' activities. They are open weekends in October on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Boulevard Boo Parade is returning to the college area near San Diego State on Saturday, October 26th, starting at 10 a.m. Organizers say that this Halloween-themed parade is bigger and spookier than ever, with more floats, music, and costumed participants. Later that day, the Ray and Joan Croc Center hosts its annual Boo Bash from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., just minutes from the parade. The Heart Mural Project of Ramona is presenting the first annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival, to be held at the historic Amy Strong Castle at Mount Woodson. The festival will be held on November 2nd from noon to 6 p.m. Art, wine, and food enthusiasts may visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net. The event features local artists, Ramona wineries, and local chefs, each of which will be located around the castle. Musicians will provide elegant background music as patrons browse the creations of 15 fine artists, sip award-winning wines from 12 wineries, and taste the culinary delights of 5 local chefs. And then the last preview, the Phoenix Rises for the 7th year at the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History in Poway next weekend, from October 18th through the 20th at the Poway Rodeo Grounds. Knights in shining armor astride chargers, the crack of shattered lances, the flash of swords, live music, food, and fun all return to Poway October 18th through 20th at the Tournament of the Phoenix. Jousting knights from the United States, Poland, New Zealand, and the Netherlands compete in a 6-event competition. The audience can also explore hands-on history as the Festival of History presents Rome to the Renaissance. Also, there will be various games, crafts, activities, skill contests, and the opportunity to meet the knights at the Knights Camp. Artisan crafts, booths, food, and live music will round out the event. All of these activities and more can be found in our Festival and Events section and on our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a new state law that prohibits California from cooperating with the federal government on indefinite detention of American citizens under the National Defense Authorization Act and other laws that violate citizens' rights. The California Liberty Preservation Act, which is Assembly Bill 351, passed the legislature almost unanimously and has been signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown. This makes California the third state to nullify provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act, or the NDAA. But California's law goes even farther, banning state cooperation by state employees or the National Guard with any federal authorities on the enforcement of any federal law that violates the U.S. Constitution, the California Constitution, or California law. The bill also prohibits use of state funds for these purposes. Now, the NDAA suspended the right of habeas corpus, which is a freedom that dated back to the Magna Carta in Old England, giving anybody arrested the right to appear before a judge. The NDAA was passed by Congress to detain suspected terrorists, but it allows the arrest even of citizens without informing them of their criminal charges, with no right to a trial, or any other due process safeguards required by the Constitution. The 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution guarantees that states and the people shall retain all powers except those that are specifically delegated to the federal government in our Constitution. Founding Father and former President James Madison once warned that the way for states to stop federal overreach of power would be for agents of the state to refuse to cooperate with officers of the Union. But in recent years, many federal laws have arguably curbed states' rights and constitutional protections. While written to prevent indefinite detention, AB 351 could be interpreted to prevent the state from cooperating with the federal government on a wide range of other issues in which federal actions have overridden state laws, from marijuana regulation to gun laws to privacy rights. The measure, if challenged in court, is apt to set up a confrontation over states' rights that could ultimately be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, a Republican sponsor of the bill, said that legislators have a moral duty to protect Californians. He said, "When constitutional protections are ignored, racist hysteria allows vulnerable groups to be targeted, such as what happened with the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Assemblyman Mark Leno, a Democrat who sponsored the bill, said that indefinite detention amounts to throwing away the basic foundations of our Constitution and of our nation. The measure drew backing from a diverse coalition that included the American Civil Liberties Union, the Libertarian Party of California, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and the 10th Amendment Center."
Welcome to Reel to Reel. Every show, we will bring you authentic, independent artists. I'm your host, Dean Bruce, and I sit down every show with a diverse group of musicians, not only digging deep into the grit of the music-making process, but also bringing to you the real stories of these real artists. This is Reel to Reel. Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Dean Bruce. We're in studio tonight with High Tide. Say hello, everyone.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
So we got Blaze, Brian, Ed, Kale, Dave, Garrett, huge band in the studio, one of the biggest ones we've ever had. We're going to get right into it. Why don't you give me an idea of how you guys got started?
Originally, we jammed through some party, house party kind of influences where, you know, a guy's playing guitar, a guy's playing drums, and it's kind of randomly jammed together. And High Tide's been a fluid entity since the beginning, and we've come around to where we feel like we're poised to make some moves in the scene and stuff like that. We got a SDMA nomination just recently for our last album, so we're
nice.
Feeling good about that. And we're
the
just SDMAs ready.
Are coming up right around the corner, aren't they?
Yeah, next month.
Talk to me about the process that you go through making the music. You know, let's talk about Back for More, for example. How did you guys start that off? Do you do lyrics first and then the music? Do you do the music first, lyrics? And kind of walk me through that process.
It changes from track to track. High Tide's a very collaborative project. It always has been. So we've all kind of brought our influences in. It's very much my influence on that song. And so it's got this upbeat, major, quick guitar riff kind of thing happening. And it's really for my lady, you know, I love her. Shout out to my lady, Mavi.
You talked about Sublime. Obviously, musical influence. What other kind of bands are out there that you really are digging on that you kind of feel like you either draw from or want to be like?
Well, there's a lot of contemporary acts out there that are doing reggae, and they're doing it really well and doing it big, like Slightly Stupid, Revolution, bands like that, Iration. These are bands that really came from a lot of Hawaii vibes and with the California mix, too. And we're strictly San Diego, so we like to throw our San Diego spin on everything.
Yeah, on that Revolution note, last year I actually toured with them. I was their backup horn player because their horn player was missing a lot of shows. So I filled in for about 3 months full-time playing sax, and while I was on the road with those guys, I learned a lot about the business aspect of it, which I kind of brought back to the band here. So that band is very focused, and
they're great guys too.
Yeah, they're great guys, awesome people, positive vibes, but very focused.
So you talk about bringing the business aspect into it, and it's a good point, because making music is one thing. Anybody can get together and throw some people together and produce a song. It may not be a good song, but they can produce the song. But there is a business aspect to it. What do you think that you guys were missing?
Well, I think a big part of it was, prior to going on the road with Evolution, all of our stuff was just recorded amongst friends in, you know, decent studios, good studios, but we didn't have a full-time producer backing us. And when I came back from the road, we had the opportunity to work with Ian Young,
who, of Tribal Seeds.
Of Tribal Seeds, yeah, who's an up-and-coming producer. I mean, a huge producer in the scene right now.
Roots musician, I believe.
Yes, Roots Musician Records.
Yeah. .com, check that out. They've got a lot of up-and-comers on there. Hyrie, she's nominated for SDMA. Gonzo from Beyond Eyesight records with them. You know, we're going to work continuously with Ian Young for sure. He's a great guy. You know, everybody's just really positive. It's such a positive scene to play reggae. We're really blessed.
Do you think that there's a point at which you stop being artists and you just are going through the motions? You know, you have an A&R guy, you've got a manager, you've got producers, you've become a little sheltered, and the vibe, the positiveness of your message starts to dwindle because you're just trying to put music out there and get a paycheck?
Yeah, that can happen for sure. I mean, we're trying not to go that route. We're trying to keep the roots in there. That's why, you know, reggae has roots, and it's really important as reggae artists to not forget your roots. And that's why when I met Eric from Revolution, I was really stoked to see that he's a really down-to-earth guy, you know, and it's good to see that the people we look up to are really good people, and it just helps us to want to be good people as well and really push the music forward, you know, and ride the wave. You know, we're high tide. We want to ride that vibe, you know, every day.
Let's take a few minutes and listen to Eye for an Eye by High Tide.
What's at stake? Cause sometimes the blind, them lead the blinds. Where them moving, y'all get back in line. I said now, we got to change the course. We need to spread some love right from the source. We got nothing to lose except for your mind. Look, take a minute, so you better make it right again. Oh yeah, yeah. It's a night for a night. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
we're in studio with High Tide. If I'm looking for you out in the internet, where can I go to find you guys?
Well, if you want to hear us on internet radio, we're on Pandora. We're on Spotify. Just look for High Tide Reggae. We're all over YouTube. Our website is always getting updated. Brian always rocking the website stuff. He's really good with that stuff. HighTideReggae.com. Check us out online and also Facebook.com/SDHighTide. And once again, HighTideReggae.com.
We're going to close out the show tonight with Misled Souls. And you guys are going to rock the house. I appreciate you guys being in tonight, taking the time, you know, spending a few minutes to sit down and talk with me. We've had a great time tonight in studio. High Tide, they definitely are rocking the reggae scene with some positive music, positive vibes. And we're going to close it down with Misled Souls.
Company, I misled souls. Oh no, misled soul. Now come. your company of mine. No, 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 no. Misled soul, now keep the company of misled souls. Oh, no, no. Misled soul, now keep the company of misled souls. Oh, no, 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 no. Misled soul, now keep the company of misled souls. Oh, no, no. Misled soul, no company of mine.
Is recorded on location at San Diego Performance Academy with help of studio producer Dave Bramley, executive producer Jerry Dean, engineer Levi Wong. If you would like to appear on the show, check us out at www.reeltorealsessions.com, facebook.com/reeltorealsessions, or you can email us at info@reeltorealsessions.com. Title music provided by Look Up Here.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. Community leaders and Cedar Fire survivors will dedicate a historic memorial to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the worst wildfire in California history. The ceremony will take place on October 26th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at River Park Fire Station in Lakeside. The event will also honor first responders and celebrate fire survivor families' lifelong connection as guests pause to reflect, remember, and reconnect. There will be exhibits, disaster prevention program information, book signings by Sandra Younger, the author of The Fire Outside My Window, a VFW band, food and beverages, a moment of remembrance, and appreciation for community support. Speakers will include Supervisor Diane Jacob, Fire Chief Andy Parr from Lakeside, David Castle from the Cedar Fire Rebuilding Resource Group, and presentations will be made from the offices of Senator Joel Anderson, Assemblyman Brian Jones, and Congressman Duncan Hunter. The Cedar Fire was the largest wildland fire in California history. It started 25 miles east of San Diego in the Cleveland National Forest when a hunter became lost and lit a small fire to signal for help on the evening of October 25th, 2003. It quickly spread out of control. By the time containment was declared on October 28th, the Cedar Fire had destroyed 280,278 acres, 2,820 buildings, and killed 15 people, nearly all of them in Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon. Damage occurred across the county, but nowhere was the toll more devastating than Lakeside, where the firestorm roared through the night, catching many people unaware of the approaching inferno. The Cedar Fire continues to hold the tragic record as the state's worst wildfire in total acreage burned, homes destroyed, and lives lost. For more information on the October 26th memorial event, you can visit www.lakesidefire.com. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
This is Shalay Sasan with a special report on wildfire preparedness from KNSJ's East County Magazine radio show and the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. Already this year, California had over 1,500 wildfires, an 85% increase over an average year caused by extreme drought conditions. Now is the time to prepare for what is shaping up as a tougher-than-usual fire season, said Supervisor Diane Jacob. The firestorms of 2003 and 2007 taught us that homes with defensible space are far more likely to survive than homes without it, the supervisor added. Defensible space is an area around the home where plants and trees are maintained to prevent fire from spreading quickly. A buffer zone gives firefighters a better chance to make a stand and save your home during a wildfire. Fire officials recommend clearing away dry brush to form a 100-foot buffer zone around your home The buffer could include hardscaping such as tile, stone, or concrete patios and walkways, or fire-resistant landscaping such as succulents. Trim tree branches 6 feet above the ground so that low-hanging branches won't become ladders to spread of wildfire. Be sure to have a family evacuation plan in place and assemble a 72-hour survival kit. You can download it at readysandiego.org. The AHAS Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provides free alerts via email for major wildfires and other regional emergencies countywide. Sign up at www.eastcountymagazine.org, where you can find timely news stories posted live during emergencies. You can also follow VAHAS Alerts on Twitter to receive alerts on your mobile phone. In addition, you can also register with Alert San Diego, the region's reverse 911 system at readysandiego.org. During an emergency, you can also consult sdcountyemergency.com, the county's website with evacuation updates and maps.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.